her physical exam and see before school. And then she comes for her staging visit at her second visit, which is at 34 weeks. And again, some of the same information is gathered. She gets a medical abstract done, and she gets her OD studies and other lab studies. And then the delivery visit gets some of the same information. So what we try to do, yes, we could only do, because it's so expensive to do CD4 count viral and the whole battery, we compromised and said, well, we'll do it 3 times, but we'll accept the woman within these wide windows so that we'll be able to accept the dose.
So during those times, if I get sick in between my first, let's say I had time and I did it on all that stuff on my first visit, and in between I'm getting sick, who am I seeing? Where is the primary care that, you know, we've offered me, because that's why I'm in this study?
Most of these sites provide the primary care themselves.
Okay, so if I get, like, really bad morning sickness, and I think that it's not morning sickness, because I've never gone through this before, now I'm HIV infected, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I go back to the clinic, and I'm going to go not to see the people who are doing that for me, but the primary care people. And then they give you the information on what they prescribed for me, or what's wrong with me?
In Puerto Rico, the primary care OD people are the study people. In New York, it's the same thing. In Chicago, I haven't actually made a site visit there, so I can't address that directly, but my impression is that they also provide the primary care. In Boston, because of the way the medical system is set up there, more than likely you will be seen at one of the clinics with your primary care physician, and then the information will be captured on the medical app.
In those 3 visits, I got confused when she brought it up, and I was thinking about it. So the timing and transmission, you're just going to go by a trimester, or how do you figure that out?
As I said, we try to be as flexible as we can, given the constraints of the funding and how many times we can do these very intense studies. So we compromise on 3 visits with these wide windows so that we'd be able to capture it.
Do you have any idea, like, how those things are falling out? I mean, I think that the concern is that if everybody acts as if, you know, and you're not the only, this is not the only situation in which we've heard it, as if sort of, there's like early, middle, and late pregnancy, okay? Like 3 months are like collapsed into 1 point, okay? And which makes an assumption about transmission, which is a fairly coarse assumption, okay? It sort of says you're never going to pinpoint it, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and then there are studies that say it happens late, but they don't say where, and then they say some studies say it happens early, and they don't say where. But the truth is that if you really, in terms of future, well, two issues. One, in terms of a woman having all the information she would need to make a choice, a reproductive choice. Mm-hmm. And second, in terms of giving toxic drugs to a fetus, okay? The more precise that point would be from these studies, the better each of those decisions could be, okay? But so it means that in some way, and again, I'm not saying only if you said, but for future stuff, if it's going to be part of a larger natural history study, it seems that we've got to know when women are entering the trial, and given a window period of like 18 to, what, say 30, 23 weeks, or 18 to 32, mm-hmm. How many women are coming in at 18? How many at 19? How many at 20?
Oh, that we're collecting.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems to me that that's important, because there are other possibilities in terms of research design. Mm-hmm. Possibilities are that you randomly give women different tests at different times. In other words, like that you would make sure that some subsets of women would get battery of tests A, B, and C in that order. And another battery of women would get C, B, and A. And another battery, okay, so that you would be sure that for a subsample of your population, you had every possible test measurement for some woman who was at a particular point in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And it would be more complicated, but at least it might get that information eventually in a more usable fashion, because if you get women coming into the study late, if a lot of the women are entering, midpoint in pregnancy, we're not going to have information from before then, if they're, you know. So it's just, I think that that's the issue, is like sort of how finely detailed will we be able to get in terms of where transmission is occurring.
A lot of the pregnancy studies that CDC sponsors and other people that I know about, you'll see some clever wording usually in the presentations about scheduled visits. And usually those data sets are so helter-skelter. People come whenever, they get seen whenever, they get scheduled for visits like five times, maybe they make one of them. So then you see this data all lumped together because the data is so sketchy. And that's really typical.
Yeah, and in fact, you know nothing about
right.
timing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
Right.
So there are no hypotheses to go on. So, you know, it makes it really hard to try to figure it out. And so sort of, you know, including timing as a goal in this is purely going to be speculation at the end result, it seems to me, because when it is done helter-skelter, and we know nothing to begin with, then we're not going to get any further, except for just the, you know.
I think the helter-skelter that Diane was referring to was CDC and not ours. But, and then other studies, too, that aren't, I don't know who this one, I think 95 from you as well. But when you talk to the people doing the studies, they say it's extremely difficult quite often, because when you have a pregnant woman, she has so many stresses on her life at that moment, including fear that her baby's having a baby. She's part of the system. So her urge is to not be there in that study, in that structure, in the hospital, as much as possible. So that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
I just have a medical question. If you're not doing amnios unless they are called for, you know, outstanding medical conditions, a sonogram is not going to be giving you transmission information.
No, but it will give you information on growth and development and any abnormal congenital anomalies that can be detected.
But there's so many. But I mean, there's so many things that could be. HIV could be affecting the growth and development, and there could be other outside factors
right.
as well. So, I mean,
and we're assessing those outside factors, like maternity, drug use, like alcohol, like smoking, things that we know will affect.
So, are you trying to ascertain that it's the growth and development that you're getting from a sonogram read? How are you ascertaining the transmission? I guess is saying that if there is abnormal growth and development, that seems out of
There is a correlation between intrauterine development and HIV infection, then that would be helpful to know. If there is a marker using ultrasound data that will tell you that there's an increased risk for transmission, then we'll know that information.
But
amnio is so fraught with
okay.
methodologic laboratory problems. It is not the way to go, number one.
No.
Number two, we're afraid of increasing the risk of transmission by doing an invasive procedure.
Right.
So
yeah.
it's not something we want to recommend.
Right.
We don't want to recommend to the obstetricians
yeah.
that they do amnio or CVS when it's not necessary.
Right.
Chorionic bill of sampling. So we don't want any of these invasive
right.
tests where blood is going to be
yeah.
introduced.
But so basically you can't say that like at the third month, you can't really read and say that a transition happened. It happens at the third month of pregnancy or the 6 months.
No, because we're enrolling, you know, at 18 to 32.
But even if you were enrolling, you were enrolling non-pregnant women who got pregnant on study or whatever, so to say.
Yeah, but nobody can say that now.
Yeah, because you don't really, you have nothing to be measured, and you can look at development, but let's say you could have HIV, let's say the fetus in utero has HIV, but there could be a delay between the HIV to affecting the development. It's not like an instant,
mm-hmm.
you know. So in other words, even after this study is completed, we're still not going to know, and we don't have anything that measures at this point.
Well, as
to say
I said, we were restrained within the context of the funding and where we could in real life be able to ascertain this.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured out when the women were most likely to present. And if they presented as early as 18 weeks, we enroll them. If they present later.
Can you present to you? Or
if you present to
the WIT study, okay,
right.
at that
right.
time in gestation,
right.
then we're flexible enough to enroll them.
Right.
Albeit, we're trying to be realistic with what, you know, real life is for
yeah.
okay. So we're trying to get them when we can.
Right.
And I think that we're doing more than other studies have done by trying to assess them at three different points.
Where somebody put a concept sheet together and put it into you guys and said, okay, now we want to do this study. Or did somebody say, you need to do a study on timing of transmission, and here's your budget, and that's why you have budget constraints? I mean, where did this idea of yet another 076, but really titled with another name?
No, this isn't supposed to duplicate 076.
There are right, some there's still a lot of things that are real familiar to, I mean, the flavor of it is
yes, but
really
far.
Close.
Really, we could argue
that 076 is another
WIT. Because of WIT. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
and
or at the very least,
WIT
076
more.
Should not be done until something like this will give us baseline data on
right.
transmission
right,
rates.
Right, right.
When we've got, you know, studies in Europe saying it's like 12 or 13%, and they're basing,
but we can't trust those.
They're basing 076 on a 30 to 40% transmission, you know, expected rate without anything else. I mean, the fact of the matter is 076 is being based on some really like shaky data in terms of transmission.
Well,
I mean,
absolutely, there's some flavors of
yeah.
that are very similar.
Except I think
it's
a little more comprehensive in terms of.
Well, and also because 076. Came after this. I mean, in other words, I think I would agree with Marion's concept, which is that this is 076. In other words, if women are going to be given AZT, if their T cells go below a certain level, et cetera, at the end of this, you will have women who took AZT during pregnancy or didn't take AZT during pregnancy.
There were a lot of
these
women,
these women in the study
can be another comparison group, and that's exactly one of the recommendations I made to Rod, which is you can use this as another comparison group to enhance the power of 076.
Really,
well,
that
no,
didn't
without,
have to even
without,
do
without
it. I think what we're saying is
that... I think that the observational study itself is stronger than 076 alone.
V.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And those arguments were made before 076 was set up.
Because one of the things, for instance, that people argued about 076 when we asked them what were they doing for the mother... Like what kinds of, you know, measurements were they taking about the mother and whether they're going to do natural history? It was like, you know, really, well, we're doing nothing. Okay? And, you know, they had no, until we pressured them for a very long time, they had absolutely no concerns about the primary care of the mother or doing any, you know, natural history stuff
well,
or anything.
I think
but this ends up with a naturally occurring 076.
Right. Right. I think the integration of the OBs in this but I'm not here to defend OBs.
No, I'm
right.
just saying
that.
We're just
okay.
telling you that we think that WIT
is better.
is better than 076 and will give us
better
information that we need even in a better way than 076 because, you know, with 076 you go under 300 CD4, solve your app. That's it.
I like this idea
of anything about
randomizing the schedule. So that's something worth thinking about because the WITS is going to be redefined. So this is right now to really argue for that.
I mean, the reality is that there's really no way of using lab tests with atomic transmission, so we're going to have to be using, you know, clinical and it's going to be retrospective and it's only possible to turn on time every week or every month or every 2 months. It's so difficult in terms of. We don't have anything, any marker that will tell us at this point transmission happens. So it's a lot of guesswork and retrospective stuff. So I don't know if people got tested every single week in this thing, that would tell us a lot about the mother's health. I don't know that.
It would really be helpful in the literature to know whether it happened during pregnancy, after labor.
Well,
I mean, it would be nice to know if it happened during.
Definitely. And, I mean, that would make it, if we do come up with a drug that interrupts transmission, you know, then that would be vital information based on how agreed that we need it, but there's not much that we can do now.
Actually, I have another question related to this, though, which is, are you also keeping, like, I always wonder what the HIV status of sperm
right.
of the father has to do with transmission also.
Right.
And is there any record of that? I mean, I know that, like, the fathers aren't being kept
aren't part of this study. I hope that the women don't need consent of the fathers to participate in this study. But is that mentioned
not
anywhere?
Not in the context of the study. But the HAPS has some information.
So you're collecting, like, any of the...
Not
what I hear is talking about, like, viral load in the sperm.
Right, like, not could, because the other question is at conception. Mm-hmm. You know, is there transmission at conception, you know, second trimester, third trimester delivery?
Yeah,
we can't eliminate the conception element.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Preconception.
I just have one other question on this, which has to do with, like, the race and ethnicity is white, black, white, non-Hispanic, black, non-Hispanic, and Hispanic. And the other, which is, out of the 164, which five, is like 3%. Are any of these sites going to be enrolling Asian American women or Native American women? Or are we basically doing a black, white, and Hispanic study? And are, given the sites, are those more likely to be Puerto Rican women and not like Mexican American women?
The ethnicity is going to reflect the people who usually come to that hospital. The predominant number of Hispanic women are going to be Puerto Rican. Because most of them are in the Northeast. Chicago would have more of a mixture of Hispanic women simply because of their geography. There's going to be Puerto Ricans in that site. Also, Columbia University has a high.
And the studies that are coming up, you're talking about a WITS 2, which I saw listed, right. But I'm not sure what it's going to be.
It's going to get recompeted. All the people who have sites now have to go through a new company.
And there may be. That be a criteria for this? I mean, I think that there, we talked a little bit about this the other day, our concern about the diversity of the women who end up being in here. And like to have an other category, it just always is problematic. There's a woman who's at the ACTGs who is from Hawaii.
Yeah. And in terms of American Indian women, that there are some agencies that have been collaborative with the Indian Health Police. That's all
the women
to get access.
AIDS project with Sharon's.
Right.
Yeah, but it's education.
It's education, right.
One thing I was thinking though is started the wheel covering with NIS. Is that structural idea of this research work that you could have regional global research groups attached to that as a collaborative project? I'm just proposing.
Especially in rural areas, the still problem statistics I've seen in terms of American Indian women, given a lot of that hospitality issue, lack of any health care, and many cities have an urban Indian health, rural ones, and I've seen people get every day or some trust, hard to get foreign accessing.
I am the person who has the data, so.
Well, in the other study, with respect to coming between the options, because you patients may not have any side with respect to who makes decisions here.
I think that their own criteria.
That could be any criteria, it seems. Especially when you get pregnant women where, you know, they may have a bias with respect to giving treatment to women.
They use their own, to answer your question, they use their own clinical criteria, and my understanding is that they present the choice to the woman, and that the woman makes
they're not told they need to take AZT. They're given the pros and the cons, the information we do and do not know,
so
and then
that
the woman chooses.
In the protocol. I mean, you know, that's sort of a written, you know, the investigator educational piece with respect to, you know, making.
Well, the obstetricians, for example, have Fox and were involved in drafting the OB recommendations for treatment for HIV-infected women with regards to or count during pregnancy. So they are very well informed about and had a part in drafting those recommendations. So those published recommendations are the guidelines that
they
we would use, but we don't impose our own guidelines for them to use. In other words, it's not written in the protocol. When a CD4 count is less than 300, thou shalt offer AZT, thou shalt do this. I mean, it's not.
In that regard, and those in all parts, I was just thinking that one of the things that I didn't see on that form, Are you collecting information on other medication? I mean, everybody talks about AZT, which frankly is not what I think can keep people alive. I mean, and I know you get stuff on PCP, prophylaxis, but other kinds of
medication.
Do you get it on non-traditional medication? In other words, do you know if someone is doing holistic med? I didn't see anything like that. You asked people if they're taking medications.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see any questions about whether they're doing, whether they go to groups, whether they, are taking acupuncture or vitamins or, herbal medications and stuff like that.
You're right. Not in the context of WITS, but the observational database, which we can talk about later, is assessing that kind of information.
Why wouldn't you get it on with? And why wouldn't you bother?
I think it was just a matter of within the constraints of the five questions that we had, just prioritizing, the things that the study team thought were appropriate.
Did you ask about
nutrition? Maybe it's useful to go back a little bit in terms of the history of WITS, in that before any of us came here, WITS was a contract that had already been completed, and the sites and the PIs were already selected, and a protocol was written already with a separate data management team. And then we had a recompetition of the data management center with the changes and the logistics going on there, but we also had a review about a year and a half ago where some outside reviewers took a look at the protocol, and in the context of the science that had occurred between the time that it was completed in the beginning and the information on natural history and transmission that we had until that point, we had some recommendations to refocus our study to answer these specific five questions. And so we streamlined the protocol substantially to be able to address those narrow questions. So that's really the history, besides started out to be a much more complete study in the beginning, and then we refocused substantially to be able to answer these five questions. So that's sort of the background of the study.
But the reason I'm asking is because since we have no idea what affects transmission, okay, and we have no idea what keeps certain people with HIV healthier than other people, things like not just other kinds of sources of, staying healthy in terms of, herbal stuff, but also like nutrition, okay, exercise. There are a whole host of factors that, first of all, everyone tells pregnant women they should take care of if they want to have healthy babies, okay? Eat well, get sleep, do this, do that, okay? But if it's not, see, what I'm concerned about, if it's not assessed in here, it gets sort of under the catchment of, like, demographics, okay? But it's not true. I mean, people eat differently in the same income bracket, whether you're poor or, you may eat differently than someone else. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to eat healthy food, simply by virtue of your income or, the amount of exercise or sleep.
Actually, the NAC study has a pretty decent nutritional assessment, and that could be borrowed from, I think, well, anyway, it's also attached to it. I looked at the one in the NAC, which it's quite complete. They have, I thought, some interesting hypotheses about the proposed diet.
Vegetarian.
Well, I don't quite agree that we know nothing about transmission.
Well,
I mean, we do know some things.
Yeah.
That if you have inflammation of the placenta and anemia and a low CD4 count,
transmission to a fetus, and also the health of the mother during the whole pregnancy and stuff like that. I mean, all that stuff, if you're talking about natural history, is going to be influenced by a lot of factors that have nothing to do with the drugs you're taking. I mean, see, the problem to me is that so many of these studies get drug-focused instead of natural history-focused, that in fact we may be totally missing the boat on what is keeping people healthy and alive.
This is a chance to really broaden the focus and look at everything. The trials, they're pretty straightforward.
Yes.
You randomize, you give
it. Sure, women are getting better health care, or consistent, or what are the...
In which two, will there still be only four sites?
Probably more.
They don't know exactly how many, but they're talking about it.
Depends on how much money there is and how many...
The budgets basically exist from year to year, the way I've been understanding it, depending on Congress.
Forget when I thought.
Who determines where the studies will be done? I mean, how is that decision made?
There's a review process that's mandated by the Health and Human Services, and there's certain rules on it. The direct part of that has to be an act, like one government
review committee.
Right.
So what determining that time?
Right. So it has to be a kind of a peer review process.
Do they allow somebody from a community, like a person like myself, to come in and sit on this review board, maybe without...
They didn't used to, but now they're starting to do this. In the last ACPG competition, they put...
I would like to know how you can go about getting involved in that.
Yeah. Definitely pass your name on to do that if you want to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I would really welcome that, because
I'm sitting here,
I think they need a lot of
possible sites. You've got great sites, so you're telling me, because I'm from New York City area, and I know that the Columbia University site, you're getting a whole new emphasis in the Dominican area of women who are getting sexually transmitted now, which is a whole different thing from the IV drug use transmitting, and a different thing from IV, from women who were sexually transmitted because IV drug using partners. These are women now that I'm seeing a lot of that. They come from bisexual partners, and there's like nothing there for them. They come to
which is so taboo for us.
Yeah, and they're coming from a whole different field of a whole new type of woman now, with nothing that you're talking about. We don't have studies for us. I mean, I don't even know what kind of information to give these women. But it's in good areas where you can probably get a combination of them kind of women there to get something from the study. But then again, if them particular questions aren't addressed in the study, like my team was saying with the lesbians, these women are going to come out and say it. I know in a support group I sat in, the woman, after sitting in a support group and comparing information, realized that it was that her husband had to be a bisexual man, because it was totally eliminated that he used no drugs, and he wasn't the type that would prostitute from what she knew, and then it dawned on her. So there was a whole, now there was a better understanding there, and she knew now when she went in the clinic what kind of things she can talk about and what other questions arise, so we can get a better conclusion of what's going on with these different lifestyles of women, because it's so, so many different variables of women. And the other thing that I wanted to say, I'm interested in how you get on that board.
Yeah, can you spell your name for me? Because I can pass your name on the
person. Marina, M-A-R-I-N-A, Alvarez, A-L-V-A-R-E-Z. And another concern of mine,
a phone number, I can...
Yeah, 212-589-7664. I think we can make a good to these, as far as where we think that it would be great and why.
Yeah.
I mean, you're asking. The other thing is that, I don't hear a lot. I know in your study is coming up, and I haven't read a lot of this stuff, but what comes up is about women who are on methadone maintenance programs and are current IV drug users, which I suspect come into your site possibly in Brooklyn and if anything is included for these women, and is it like something studied to, because it's a different situation when they're on a controlled substance like a methadone or they're actively using drugs. Is there anything focused specific on WAPA? Because your study is so comprehensive.
One of the things that we're trying to do is trying to identify those women accurately from those who are using, certain drugs, from those who are not, and what drugs they're using, because, as you know, it's very hard to admit that you're using a drug when you know that that information may be used to take away your baby. So, in the context of this study, we are doing urine drug testing, and we're not testing that urine until the mother has delivered, and we very carefully have an agreement with a certificate of confidentiality such that that information from the study can't be used against her for clinical reasons or legal reasons.
The second part of that question is that if she came in on that first visit that Shay so clearly, described, would she be excluded because then maybe this drug that she's taking her body might throw something up in your
Not at all.
And they wouldn't be able to determine
not
time
at all.
Of transmission.
It's not,
she would not be excluded. Because
no.
I was excluded from studies because
you know, my liver was so bad from
right.
using drugs from so many years,
right.
and I was trying to get into the study, and when they did a count on me,
right.
but of course, you know, all these years of using drugs, of course, because my liver was off, and I couldn't qualify for the study, and I thought that that was an exclusion for a lot of women who use drugs at the time, and we couldn't get into a lot of the clinical trials because of that. And if you want to study women who are, because we're the ones that predominantly are affected, then that was a real good way of excluding us from finding out about it.
That's a point very, very well taken. Because we're a transmission natural history study, we're not a treatment study per se.
Yeah.
We don't have our hands tied with regards to, you know, lab cutoffs, because we're not, our primary research is not, you know, whether you're on drug or not.
We've been trying to get NIDA to come in and do some work of some, you know, that criteria, you know, because everybody thinks it's just crazy. You know, the elevated liver enzymes are normal, you know, so.
You know, and if you don't study it now, you're not going to know
right.
when you're putting it out there.
That's something NIDA's very involved in, and there's a Mary Jean Creek in New York is a good pharmacologist interested in that, and there are a few other people as well, so they're trying to interested in in the whether or not those should be used as a back as an exclusion criteria, and everybody thinks they shouldn't be. So
liver trial.
So we're getting people in who are NIDA investigators who are experts in the area trying to beat down that criteria.
Well, in some cases, fatty toxic. It can be very dangerous.
We're trying to get some, you know. Do you know her, Mary Jean Creek? Mary Jean Creek. She's at Rockefeller University. Mm-hmm. She'd be a great person for you to talk to, because she could tell us all if she knows what she's doing. But she has a very good background in all of that. She, in fact, worked with Dole to develop methadone and other things, and has done a lot of work up on liver diseases are her specialty, and we're trying to get her involved as other people in setting the criteria, what really should be parameters, you know, not just to get rid of the criteria altogether, but what's more realistic.
Diane, I have some follow-up suggestions taking off from what Maxine was saying about the natural history study and the woman-to-woman transmission. Don't forget that there are lesbians who are prostitutes who have sex for drugs, sex for money, sex for survival, and that, or a lesbian's partner may be an IV drug user. And so, you know, for the natural study histories, you know, those kinds of questions are pertinent. And believe me, I have a major hard time with understanding, and this is a new concept for me in the last year, when somebody presented this theory to me of there are lesbians who have sex with men who are still considering themselves lesbians when they're having sex for drugs or survival or, you know, whatever. I'm like, they're bisexual then.
No,
they're not lesbians.
It's true,
you know?
It's true for men sometimes too.
Well, let me tell you, because I'm a lesbian and it did not even compute. So if I wasn't aware of it, I just wanted to say this to you because I'm not so sure that you're aware of it. Because sometimes I still have that, are you kidding, you know, kind of.
But no, it's who you identify with. It doesn't mean who you have sex with on necessarily. You're a lesbian identified.
Choice.
I would put the other slide out on that, which is that in fact, in terms of people in different agencies who are doing AIDS stuff, when you raise that, that's the only thing they can think of.
Yeah, right.
Because they want to avoid studying women-to-women transmission,
right.
because no one is admitting the level of IV drug use in the lesbian community.
Right.
Okay, it's almost like a one-night stand with a man, and you have HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it. You know, that's why they get included. You know, even early on, the CDC did ask that question. They asked that same question the way the ODB does, you know. Have you ever had sex with a man? Have you ever had sex with a woman? Which was really intended for gay men, to find out whether they were bisexual or not. Okay? and you know, when the woman said, if the woman said she ever had sex with a man, ever, 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 even once, just like if you say you ever, 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 ever once shot drugs, okay, you will be put in those categories.
even if you say that you had a lesbian lover who was Ivy
right.
to you, and you had mm-hmm. sex, you know, for years with that person,
right.
And,
right.
and you only once shot drugs, and you only once, you will go into either IV drug use or heterosexual transmission.
Right.
So it's, that's the other side of that, which is, it's almost like people are using that as the category to avoid studying the other stuff,
right.
you know.
Yes.
And then, of course, the third side, and in New Jersey, this is particular, well, it's particular to New Jersey, but there are plenty of women in New Jersey who have sex with women and also have sex with men who are having sex with women primarily, but would never call themselves lesbian.
Right.
Well, also,
and
by the same token,
so.
I think there are women who are either married or in heterosexual
right.
relationships
right.
who may decide to have an affair with a woman
right.
and again, yeah. consider themselves heterosexual.
Right.
So it's right. different permutations.
I mean, some of the same things happened in prison relationships, that they form relationships with people that they're in prison with, that they would not necessarily consider the same way that they affect their partner. They're still, I mean, you know, something I would call a lesbian relationship while they're inside, but they don't think of it that way because that's just not where their identification is. Mm-hmm.
This actually leads naturally into the heterosexual
okay.
studies, so
yeah,
I'm going to get the
yeah,
overview.
Let's do that.
That and that also is being rethought, so this is a good opportunity to do this.
Is there going to be a HETS too? Is that the idea?
Well,
yeah,
kind
of.
Not per se. It's going to be a bit more focused, but let me give you the overview of the HETS as it is now, and then I can tell you
excuse
about
me, what's
the future. Janice Kendall. The HETS as it stands now has two sites, two clinical sites, and a data coordinating center. The two clinical sites are each doing something different, so I'm going to deal with each one individually. The clinical sites, one is in Brooklyn, New York, at SUNY, the State University of New York Downstate Medical Center. The other clinical site is the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, which is in New York, New Jersey. The data coordinating center is at the University of Michigan. The Brooklyn site, we're conducting a prospective study of women who are at high risk of acquiring HIV infection as a result of heterosexual activity. And the general purpose of the study is to identify risk factors associated with the acquisition. The population is, I would say, probably 99%, is 100% minority. Typically, mostly a lot of Haitian and Caribbean women. To date, there are approximately 500 women who have been enrolled in the study in Brooklyn. Minister a question asking of public information, use of history, actual history, medical history, also they also have blood drawn as well.
So wait, demographics, drug use, sexual history,
medical history, physical exam, including a pelvic exam, and lab studies of blood and urine. Maxine has seen the questions, the various versions of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
In New Jersey, we're doing a discordant couple study of heterosexual couples against wicked transmission, and the purpose is to identify factors associated with partners. In New Jersey, population is about 60% minority, Blacks and Hispanics, the other 40%. In that study, we have 126 couples who have been enrolled, 126 couples. And since the numbers are relatively small, this is where the collaboration with the CDC comes in. Since last spring, we've been working to develop a collaborative study with the CDC, and it hopefully will begin at the end of January. What we've been doing is taking what the CDC site has been doing in our site, focused study of discordant couples, as well as a discordant and concordant couple different component. And it's going to be very similar to what we've already been doing in New Jersey, which is every 6 months to look for seroconversion. Concordant couples comparison, it'll be a kind of a one-shot situation where we're going to ask them to go back, sort of collect, we're going to collect retrospective information from them, asking them to go back in time to see if we can see any discordant couples and couple behaviors.
More of a control.
We have not, this is, okay, we, right, and a couple, just to kind of reiterate, we have not seen any conversions in either the Brooklyn site or the New Jersey site. This apparently what's happening is that being in the study is protective in terms of people in the study are given a lot of education, a lot of counseling. In New Jersey, we've started, the psychiatrist there has started groups So there's a lot of opportunity for them to get involved in counseling and education, and it seems to be working, or something's working. We don't know if it's possible.
And
they're still
having
sex.
Right, right.
So, I have a question there. Is there a possibility that somebody who enters into this is going to be inherently different from somebody who doesn't enter into this setting, and so therefore you have...
We may think we're doing something good, but we don't. That's been true in the next study. Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Well, they're all much less selective.
But it certainly is true in that people who... There's this whole thing of people who volunteer to be in studies may be different than people who don't.
Right,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what the goal is with this, and tell me, out of the 126 couples, what is the percentage that the male partner is infected, and what is the percentage that the female partner
is infected? Let me answer your second question first. Most of the couples are ones in which the male is infected. I think there are about five in which the female is the infected person in the couple.
So about 121 is where the males are, and the other five are where the females.
Right. In terms of the purpose of the study, again, it's to look at factors that are associated with HIV transmission from the infected member of the couple to the non-infected member of the couple.
Could you say that one more time? In both cases,
in both Brooklyn and New Jersey, we're trying to look at factors that are associated with transmission. So this study is not at all, it's very different from the WITS in that it's not a natural history study. We're trying to focus on transmission only.
So you give them education
in terms of how to prevent, in terms of how to prevent transmission.
And yet at the same time, you're supposed to be studying how it's transmitted.
Right.
Which they can't do because nobody's transmitting.
Because
right.
The problem is with doing ethical research.
Right. I mean, we can't not give them counseling and education. We can't say, oh, go ahead, go on and please have unsafe sex so we can get good research data.
But at the same time, how can you achieve your goal then?
Well, because we know that lots of people get educated about safe sex
and don't
necessarily follow
it
through, or they have safe sex for a while and then they stop having safe sex.
Apparently, this is some intense type of education, though.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's repetitive. And we already know repetitive education keeps people from slipping backwards. So I'm just saying that if we're spending this chunk of money trying to figure out how it's transmitted, then we're spending this chunk of money out of that chunk of money to tell them not to teach them and to reinforce along the way, not how to be infected. How can we ever achieve this goal? So therefore,
I'm spending this money. But that's part of the reason why the future of this is going to be different. The plan is not to keep on doing the study for those very reasons. The plan is for the sort of next version of the HATS is to do a study that combines basic sciences and epidemiology, in that we want to look at semen and cervical secretions and see what exactly biologically is causing the transmission to occur.
Or causing the people who didn't transmit, who did
right.
everything in the world
What's
to get infected
right.
and it didn't happen.
Because you're absolutely right. I mean, we're kind of stuck.
So this is what what you were talking about earlier. The semen and the virology load, the virus load in the semen. So that's going to be your new second part
right. That's going to be, right. The recompetition, which, and it's not all the different parts of it haven't been sorted out, but that's the sort of overall plan.
Let me go back a minute to the collaborative study that's going to start in January. That's not those four pilot sites for the WIS study.
Let me tell you about the sites. The CDC sites. There's a site in Rhode Island. Ken Mayer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a site in San Francisco, which is Nancy Cadian is the principal investigator, and she actually over the years it's actually the California partner study. It's called. It's been ongoing for a while, and they have a couple of hundred couples. And then there's a site in New York. Officially, it's Columbia University, though the site is much further downtown than Columbia. 20-something. They are actually a site that started as a part of a study of blood donors and has evolved into this couple study. The plan is, in combining now four sites, is to get bigger numbers
that's
of couples.
That's three plus the New Jersey site.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
The combination of the CDC sites and our sites is doing four in total.
And what we've been doing so far is we've got a final version, an almost final version of the questionnaire, the sort of the questionnaire that gets demographics, working on finalizing origin attitudes and exams. Last month, the sexual history of
Me. Sexual histories on these things, I mean, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't see the answer.
Just a quick one. On the first one, how are you recruiting these women at risk?
In Brooklyn.
Right, exactly.
Just about any way you can think
on
of.
On the street, you're like, hi. I mean,
What the field staff there has been doing is, while people are waiting in the clinics, giving downstate, I don't know if you're familiar with it, it's a huge public city hospital. When people come for clinic appointments, they very often have to wait a long time. They've been going to women who are sitting there waiting and telling them about the study. They've also been going out to the community. For example, there are some Haitian community centers as well as Latino community centers, and going out and giving information out there as well.
What about drug treatment programs?
No, we'll see. Okay, we've been, because this is a study of how we're trying to focus in